here on World Football Daily. Let's move on and move ahead away from the north of England and down to the south of the US of A. We're heading across the border now and getting ready to talk all things Liga MX with one of my favourite guests to have on the show today. She joins us, as always, from San Diego, but she spends plenty of time down across the border covering Mexican football, and she's going to be an expert on Costa Rican football as well by the end of the summer. I am sure of that. Joining us here on World Football Daily to take us through a little bit of Liga MX is, of course, the wonderful Miss Kim Tate. Kim, a pleasure to have you on the show, mate. How are you today?
Pleasure is all mine. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, Kim. Very well indeed. Slightly sore from a long day today, but we will dive into that later, I'm sure, here on the show. You spend, I think, Kim, more time south of the border than a San Diego high school kid looking for kicks. I mean, every time I see anything from you on social media or anything like that, it's down in Mexico. You are falling in love with Mexican football, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I fell in love with it a long time ago. But yes, being in Tijuana and getting to experience everything south of the border definitely enhances the experience, that's for sure.
I think there's plenty of people very jealous that they can, that watching you dive across the border almost every weekend for the football. And before we talk about the Clausura season at the moment and get into kind of Copa Libertadores that's taking place right now, I want to go back, if we can, Kim, because we never really got round to talking about León against Club America in the Liga MX final rounds of the Apertura season. And when we last had you on the show, we were lauding Club America. It was going to be the saviour of the national team. They were, you know, flying high in the Apertura season. And then met León in the final, and it all went wrong. What happened, if you can remember that far back, Kim? What happened?
Well, I think there was a lot of speculation that, you know, since the majority of América's team, seven of their players, started in World Cup qualifying, that sort of translated to their performance in league play. And, you know, whether or not that's the case, something that is definitely true that can be said is that they underwhelmed in their performance. And I don't think anybody really expected them to end up losing 5-1 on aggregate. But that first game against León, when they suffered that 2-0 defeat, I think that was kind of the tell-all for them, that it was pretty much over. Like I said, their performance was very underwhelming. There was a lot of errors. León was just the stronger team. All Apertura, they came out big, and they have, you know, big goal scorers in Mauro Boselli. You know, he had a fantastic season. He had a great showing in that final, and good for them. You know, I mean, it was a recently promoted team. It's I think it was their first title since like 1992. And then, of course, there's the redemption story of Rafa Márquez, who kind of had that that trifecta year of greatness, having come back from that outstanding crash in MLS and returning to El Tri and captaining his team to World Cup qualifying, and then finishing with a title, which ended up being his first.
How is it received in Mexico, León's win? Because it seems like, you know, people were looking at Club America as the big, mighty, traditional powerhouse, yet León, especially during the playoffs in the Apertura year, you know, they bossed their way through with just rampant attacking football. I think, you know, something like 17 goals scored in the quarterfinals, semifinals and finals put together. I mean, yeah, they were ultra aggressive. Did it take people by surprise?
I think for most people who had been following throughout the season, they probably figured that it was coming. Mm. But when you talk about, you know, América being that sort of traditional dominant favorite, you know, it's funny. There's a saying that América is the most hated team in Mexico. And I won't get into to those reasons, because I'm, you know, I'm still learning and trying to understand all of that myself. But, you know, going back to the whole traditional aspect of things, you know, there's that big rivalry between América and Chivas de Guadalajara. And Guadalajara is, you know, for me, and I think for a lot of Mexico fans, Guadalajara is the more traditional favorite. When America had won the title the tournament prior, they became tied with Guadalajara for the most titles ever. They're tied at 11. And so I think there were a lot of people out there that were rooting for León just to shoot América down because they want that traditional favorite that is, you know, so authentic to Mexico in Chivas to maintain or to at least not fall, I guess, to a team like América.
It's almost like kind of everybody hates Manchester United in the UK then. In terms of nobody really wanted to see, lot of people didn't want to see United overtake Liverpool with those titles won because Liverpool a bit more of a darling child of English football than modern day United and especially somebody like Manchester City as well with money, that kind of sense then.
Absolutely, you are far better at articulating that than I was. I was trying to be polite, but yeah, exactly, you said it perfectly.
No need to be polite on this show, Kim, not on World Football Daily. Feel free to throw in some cusses if you need to, my woman. Feel free.
Good to know.
when we now look forward to this Clausura year, of course, and Club America up there again, as always, up near the top. Guadalajara down in eighth, and they struggled in the Apertura as well. I mean, if they're the darling child, so to speak, the traditional glory winners of Mexican football, it's not been a great few months for Guadalajara at all.
It hasn't been a great... it hasn't been a great while for Chivas, unfortunately. They're in a better position this time in the Apertura, in the Clausura, than they were in the Apertura. Mm. During the Apertura. They've got a couple of new signings that have kind of helped them out a little bit, but, you know, in terms of placement in the table right now, we're only into second, third. We'll see what happens. My favorites in this tournament, specifically, Cruz Azul. They're under the new reign of Luis Fernando Tena, who, for those of you who don't know, was the coach for the Mexico team in the 2012 Olympics, who led them to a gold medal. And for some reason, players who play under him, I mean, he's just able to get the best out of all of his players. And Marco Fabian made the switch on loan from Guadalajara to Cruz Azul, this Clausura, and he's just done a fantastic job under his new coach. And it's kind of nice to see him sort of thriving and doing well with a club that really embraces him. And it seems like he's having a really good experience. And they're currently sitting at the top of the table with 5 wins, a draw, and 0 losses. They're the only undefeated team at the moment. Another favorite of mine is Pumas. Last year, they finished at the bottom of the table, and this year they're up in fourth. They have a few new signings. I think they signed 4 there during the offseason. Daniel Ludueña is one, and he's been fantastic. So they're another favorite of mine. Of course, Santos Laguna has sort of, I don't want to say dipped in form, but they're not getting the results that we're used to seeing a strong team like them achieve. Mm. They've only won 1 game so far this season, and they've got 4 draws on the table right now. Oribe Peralta and Darwin Quintero aren't getting the service that they need, so it's been... frustrating campaign for them so far, but I think they'll turn it around. Let's see, just trying to think off the top of my head who else we have. Morelia recently suffered the temporary loss of Jefferson Montero with the leg injury, and he hasn't really quite been the same, and he's kind of been one of those he's the type of player that's just a real pain. He's a handful no matter where he's at. He could be on the side, he could be down the middle, he could be up top. He's just a pain, and he creates all sorts of problems. And he was kind of that sharp sword for Morelia that really helps them achieve results. And he hasn't really been in form. León, as we just spoke about, they're 14th in the table right now. Not really doing so great. But it's quite different than it was... than it was during the Apertura, which I think is a surprise to a lot of people. But it's fun because it mixes it up and it's kind of like, if I could translate it to, I don't know, like a British or an American sport, you know, you've got like the Yankees and the Lakers and, you know, your usual like top 3 teams that always get the same types of results every single season. And in this particular case, it's it's not the same. You know, you've got a team that was the top of the table last Apertura, and now they're down toward the bottom. Similarly, you've got a team that everybody thought would be relegated, and now they're sitting in fourth. So it kind of keeps it exciting.
I'm going to use this opportunity to just rub one in on Rafa here. It's kind of like modern day times that the Lakers used to be great, and now they absolutely suck, and we have the Clippers to enjoy and watch. And Rafa's not going to like that one bit, but that is a fact as well. That is a fact. I'm not even making things up here in having a pop at Rafa.
Nothing but love for you, Rafa, though.
when you look at Querétaro as well, they made some pretty big headlines with the signing of Major League Soccer's Golden Boot winner from last season, Camilo Sanveso. Finally, the transfer saga all sorted out with this record multi-million deal, yet hasn't played in the Clausura just yet for Querétaro. Are you surprised a club goes and spends eventually a big, hefty fee on a big player and Sanveso not being given the opportunity to actually make an impact yet in Liga MX?
Yeah, I mean, as an outsider, it seems like it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, does it? Especially after we went through all that drama leading up to it. No, I don't really know what the case is there, and they've been kind of silent about it. But I suspect that we'll see him at least come off the bench before the end of the season. Cruz Azul did the same thing, signing three players from Major League Soccer. They signed Rafa Baca from San Jose Earthquakes, Jose Villarreal from LA Galaxy, and then Michael Farfan from Philadelphia Union. And the only one that's actually seen playing time is Jose Villarreal, and he's played for the U-20s. But other than that, we haven't really seen our MLS guys make an impact at all because they haven't seen any playing time.
We've seen plenty of Americans make some impacts in Mexican soccer. Before we touch on your relationships with these with the Mexicans, with the Americans, sorry, playing in Mexico, which I've noticed again, I'm very jealous that you're getting a lot of press time with these guys, Kim. But I want to talk to you about León and Santos Laguna in Copa Libertadores before we move on. León, as you say, struggling at the moment in the Clausura. Is that maybe perhaps because they've got one eye on pushing themselves as far as they can go in the Copa Libertadores?
I don't know if the two are directly related, but anytime you have, two conflicting tournaments, one is going to suffer over the other. And we saw that case with Club America last season, or last Apertura, when, you know, their players went on and played for Mexico. But León's an interesting one because, yeah, like we said, they're not really having the strongest season in this Clausura, but they were a decent team last night in Copa Libertadores, I thought, against Flamengo. And they came out with a 2-1 result, which was good for them. So, we'll just have to see how they do in the second leg. Santos Laguna, you know, it's kind of the same thing. They haven't really been the strongest that we've seen them been in Liga MX, but they had a great performance against Arsenal of Argentina, and Oribe Peralta got his first goal of the year for the leagues, for the team. So I don't know. I mean, I guess we're just going to have to see how that plays out. It would seem as though both teams are focused on making a deep run in Copa League because it's a very prestigious tournament, and you know they were they're there by invitation. No Mexican team has ever won a Copa Libertadores before. So, yeah, I think the pressure's on there. But, you know, these are professional players and their coaches are equally as invested in getting good results in the league table as they are in making a deep run in Copa League. It's just kind of finding a balance.
It's very difficult to find that balance as well. So many sides struggling with that. And I'm sure the long distance travelled as well in Copa Libertadores could prove problems for Santos Laguna and León as they head through that tournament. A fantastic win, as you say, though, Kim, last night against Flamengo for León. You've obviously spent a lot of time down south of the border, and you've been chatting with a lot of the American guys, especially at Club Tijuana, where I understand you've got very good links with the press guys there and with the players there. From the conversations you've had with the likes of Joe Corona, with Hercules Gomez, Edgar Castillo, etc., but not only do you get the feeling that they're enjoying it, but do you think that they're thriving more in Mexico than maybe they would have done had they kind of just stuck to playing in Major League Soccer elsewhere?
Well, yeah, it seems that way. I mean, it's, you know, with a guy like Hercules Gomez, you know, he's had a career that spanned the better part of a decade, and he got his start in I shouldn't say he got his start. I believe he actually got his start in Mexico. I may be wrong on that. But he did spend a great deal of time in MLS. Didn't really seem to work out too well for him. And, you know, he went down to Mexico and had a much better, opportunity, yes, but I guess experience. I know he's gone on record a couple times saying that, you know, he really just feels like he's home. He spent a year with Santos Laguna, where he won a title there in 2012, which ended up making him the first player ever to have won an MLS title and a Liga MX title. In the case of Edgar Castillo, you know, he was picked up by Santos Laguna as a senior in high school. He didn't even finish high school. He went over there at age 17. Debuted for them in 2008, where he won a title, and stayed with them for a few years, and then kind of bounced around Mexico and ended up at Tijuana, where he's been very happy, and, you know, he's won a regular starting role on the roster. And, you know, say what you will about Edgar, I know a lot of Americans are kind of frustrated with his performance at left back, but, you know, Klinsmann loves him. His coaches down in Tijuana love him. He's fast. He's probably faster than any of the players I've seen on that team. I mean, he just sprints and leaps all over the field. He's great in the back. He's super speedy down the wing. He's got a great relationship on the field with Joe Corona, who's another one that's... He's doing well there when he actually sees time on the pitch, because he's a creative midfielder, and when he has the freedom to be his creative self, he produces positive results. But unfortunately, he's been plagued by an ankle injury since the first part of the season, so we haven't really gotten to see a lot of him. And then there's a bunch of youngsters on the team too who are sort of up and coming. You've got Paul Ariolo, who's a San Diego native. He was offered a full ride scholarship to UCLA and a contract with the LA Galaxy, which he turned down to play for Tijuana. And, you know, the minute he stepped on the field in his friendly against Club America last July, he made an impact. He scored a goal. Same thing for all the other times that he came off the bench. He either assisted or he scored a goal. He had great performance in last year's playoffs for the U-20s, and he's even come off the bench a couple of times this season for the first team. so he's been really fun to watch, and he's had a great experience down there as well. And then you've got the other two, Alejandro Guido, who's San Diego born as well, and Greg Garza, who's from Texas, but, you know, he's 22. He's been on the bench for the first team. Every time he comes off the field, off the bench, or even starts in a game, the thing that's so great about Greg is that, you know, he's dynamic, he's powerful, he's fast, and he's great at creating an identity for himself on the field. If you are a first-time spectator, or even a second-time spectator for that matter, and you're watching the game, and you're given a list of American players, he's one that you can easily identify. And that is, you know, that's a great characteristic of a talented player. So, you know, collectively, all of them have been really fun to watch down there. And it's great in a way for the American fan base as well, because Tijuana has kind of become this gateway for American fans to start following the Mexican League. And while it's great that MLS is growing and expanding, and, you know, attendance numbers at stadiums are skyrocketing right now, and, you know, it's really starting to take off to be this huge, huge thing. It's also important to pay attention to other leagues, not only, you know, globally, but, you know, to right there on the border as well. There's always been that long-standing rivalry between the U.S. and Mexico. And so it's kind of like, you know, when you're a fan of one thing, it's sort of fun to dive into, I really don't want to say enemy territory, but... You know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand. Yeah, you don't want to cast the enemy aspersion around, but
can all... It's kind of fun to dive in and see what's going on down there in Mexico, and the fact that so many Americans and American players are becoming a part of it just makes it, it makes it a little bit more interesting. And my time in Tijuana has always been very enjoyable. The atmosphere at Estadio Caliente is one of the best I've ever experienced. The fans are great. The club goes every extra mile they possibly can to make fans really enjoy their experience. They're very accommodating for American press. They're extremely accommodating for American fans. It's just a great experience all around.
It seems to me, Kim, and we'll leave on this one because we're taking up far too much of your time here, but it seems to me that almost Club Tijuana is what the MLS wanted Chivas USA to be. Club Tijuana has, as you say, attracted a lot of American fans. There's American players going across there and thriving at Club Tijuana. Of course, won that league championship in 2012. But whereas Chivas USA, it hasn't gathered almost the Mexican market across to Major League Soccer. It hasn't been able to pull in, you know, big name Mexican players to come and play for it, despite that relationship with Chivas Guadalajara. Is that a fair statement to make, or is that maybe being either too harsh on Chivas or too nice almost to Club Tijuana?
They're very different. They're two very different things, because the business model for both is very different. I think with Chivas, you know, they wanted to extend their brand into America by having an American-based team, whereas Tijuana wants to, you know, create that professional-level team in Mexico, but still be able to attract American fans, because I think that they do recognize that there's a huge Hispanic population out here, and, you know, they wanted to appeal to both sides. But they're still staying the fact that they're staying in Mexico and staying true to their, I guess, I don't know, Mexican roots is totally the wrong term, and I'm probably going to get bashed for it, but you know what I mean. Chivas USA has been kind of an enigma, because I still think people don't know what they're trying to do. You know, you can't have an American, you can't have a Mexican-based team in America and not try to cater to American fans, where I don't really think they're trying to do any of that. I mean, if you notice on a lot of their social media and web stuff, their primary form of communication is in Spanish. And the fact that they're doing that in America, it's a little bit backwards. It's just not working.
I suppose it's not good for business. You want to put the you're based in a country. You want your websites, you know, to be in English rather than to be kind of catering almost to a market that isn't really there.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, it's hard too when you've got all of your orders coming from the higher ups in Mexico. You know, they don't really give the American side, the MLS side, you know, free rein to make their own decisions. It's all coming from Guadalajara. So, you know, that's a little bit tough. And right now, Guadalajara is a mess. So as long as they have that that tight leash on Chivas USA, if Guadalajara is a mess, guess what? USA is going to be a mess as well. So I think they need to fix their problems in Guadalajara if they're going to keep that tight leash. And then it would, you know, translate to maybe bigger success here in America, but I don't know. Fingers crossed, they'll figure it out in the next few years.
Well, let's hope that Chivas USA and Guadalajara can both pick themselves up. And Guadalajara, at the moment, in those early playoff spots for the Liga MX Clausura season finale, although a long, long way yet to be played. 11 games still left in that Clausura season. Kim, it's an absolute pleasure to have had you on today. We really appreciate you taking the time out to join us here on World Football Daily, and as we appreciate every guest that comes on. And all I can say is stay safe as you stay south of the border, and I hope you keep enjoying yourself and writing some quality pieces and not knocking too many margaritas back as well, my friend.
No, never. Never mix margaritas and work. But yeah, I do have a couple of great pieces on Hercules Gomez and Paul Arriola coming out. And then another one on Hercules Gomez and Edgar Castillo's relationship with their former club Santos Laguna, who they play on Fridays. So those will be coming out before the weekend.
Fantastic. We look forward to them. And if you send us links, we will make sure they are tweeted out to our ever eager audience who are looking to snatch up more Mexican football from you. Kim, it's an absolute pleasure once again. Thank you so much for joining us today, mate. And we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed. Maybe perhaps towards the end of the Clausura season as we head into the playoffs for the Clausura finale.
Anytime.
Cheers, Kim. Thanks a lot, mate. Kim Tate joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through a little bit of Mexican football for all you Liga MX fans there. See, it's not all about Rangers. We don't need to talk about Rangers. Raf can talk about Rangers all he wants, but...